Hey, welcome to Our Altered World. If you've been feeling overwhelmed by the giant that is climate change, you're not alone. I'm Neil, and here we celebrate the inspiring work of individuals and organizations making real positive strides that you may not have heard about. My hope is for our conversations here to make you feel inspired and reconnected to our planet. And with that being said, I would love to introduce Rodrigo from Hombre de Mai, Men of Corn.
Hi, everybody. I'm very excited to talk a little bit about the subject this day.
Rodrigo, I'm so excited that we got the opportunity to speak with you today. I would love for you to tell our listeners about the origin of Hombre de Mai. How did the ancient Mayan legend of Yumcax, I think that's how you say it, inspire you to create this movement towards what I would say, you know, self-sufficiency and regenerative living?
Sure. Our name comes from a lost and ancient Maya legend that tells the story about the creation of man. Basically, that legend says that after another attempts using elements such as stone, earth, wood, and so on, God finally chose to create humanity out of corn. The corn god, Yumcax, as you said it, took ears of corn in different colors and decided to create humankind. It is fascinating, by the way, that the legend specifically mentions ears of colored corn, white, black, yellow, red, and more. That's something that catched my attention. I think it's very curious, don't you think? And well, after creating them, you know, humanity as it is out of corn, this god felt pity when he saw those poor humans suffering, living in damn caves, eating whatever they could find, naked, without purpose, you know, all that. You know? And basically, that's when he decided to send his seven children to teach humans how to build shelters, cultivate food, obtain and manage their water, and produce food and energy in the simplest and most efficient way possible. All of this was to improve, of course, human life. And above all, they passed on knowledge and purpose. And that, I think, that's the most important contribution from this god to the humanity he created. That is to care for and preserve what you love. That was the purpose that this god gave to the people. So if we look at it from this perspective, we could say that the highest goal or the highest purpose is to live in harmony with nature by caring and maintaining what we love. And that's how I realized I found my life purpose, to teach others how to do this.
That is so beautiful. Even as you were saying the story, it was so relatable, you know, to the foundations of a lot of us that are really invested in, you know, conservation globally, environmentalism, and it rang through that story. So you went about to create Men of Corn, Hombre de Mai. Like, this, where does this name draws on this belief, you know, that we've spoken about, so, you know, that humans were created from this corn? How does this deep cultural connection influence your approach with your work? Describe what you're doing so the listeners can really understand the concept of your work and how this is relating to sustainable design.
Sure. Well, for us Mexicans, corn is a vital part of our own essence. I mean, like bees, for us, corn is not just a crop. For us, it is our identity, community, and substance. I mean, it's like for the Asians, the rice, for example. Animals tend to have this strong bond with what they eat, you know. So for us Mexicans, corn, it is not only a crop, it is a symbolism of our culture as a whole. So I chose that name because corn represents who we are. Corn shows that the best example of cooperation are the milpa itself, the agricultural system that has been preserved over the centuries, that many people think that milpa is just corn, beans, and squash, but that's just a combination of three elements. The milpa, the ancestral milpa, is a combination of over 60 elements. We're talking about a food forest here. So our people, as other cultures around the world, they discover that biodiversity coexisting and working together, you know, as long as you respect each element in its space and in its own time, you know. And that's why I chose Hombres de Maíz, because I think that name embodied all the ideals I wanted to you know, for the work we were doing.
Beautiful. Let's walk us through for the average listener to understand, you know, what was, you've spoken about the beliefs that you've drawn from and the kind of the inspiration behind your naming, but what inspired the business model? What it is that you're doing? How can you explain that to layman's terms to the people listening here today so they can get an idea in their head?
Well, I believe in the power of education. I think that everything comes from education. Any people with the correct information and practice can do mostly anything possible. What we tried to do, we started to make courses. We teach other people how to produce their own food, in their own water, or harvesting water, produce their own energy, and build their own shelters.
Really, that's like establishing that autonomy with these people, you know?
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, shelter, food, water, and energy. When a person, yes, the essential, the basic needs, they stop depending on a fragile system. These four pillars are the backbone of freedom and resilience. Because it is important to mention that it's not only about meeting basic needs. It seems that people have lost the understanding that when you actively engage in your own sustenance, processes occur that profoundly transform both body and soul. So that is possible, yeah, through education. So we started from the education level. But right now, the branches have enlarged over time, and now we cover different parts that are possible from the roots of education.
Your foundations, as we're to say, really establish around this idea of providing these educational roots for people to go out and be self-sustaining, have that resilience about them. What inspired you to establish your first demonstration site? So you had your first site, correct, where people could come and see and really do have some more understanding about your work. What inspired that first demonstration, and how has your method, you know, changed and evolved? Because I think you've been doing, is it 15 years or something like that?
15 years professionally, yes.
Incredible. So 15 years, you know, of teaching thousands of students across Mexico, and I think I read 10 other countries as well.
Yes.
How has things evolved in your method, you know, from that first demonstration site to now?
Well, knowing other cultures and other perspectives gave me teaching tools that right now have been very useful for us. Because it's not the same, the way Mexicans think or Latin American people think is not the same approach, for example, for Muslim people over Egypt, for example, or people that are living in France. I mean, perspectives are way more different than we think. I mean, yeah, people tend to be the same in all places, but their perspectives change. They vary. So, basically, when I started in Guanajuato with a small experimental plot, I wanted to prove it was possible to live with a different logic. So in 15 years, after teaching thousands of students in more than 10 countries, as you said, we've gone from small artisan experiments to complete systems that integrate water, soil, energy, and community. I chose this plot that had no soil at all. It was a piece of stone. And I wanted to apply the things that I was reading and researching by my own, based on the works of Masanobu Fukuoka, Japanese, and the works of Bill Mollison. So I wanted to apply it and see how strong and how effective were those things that I was reading, right? Mm-hmm. And obviously, the people around my site, the local people, started watching what I was doing like I was a crazy man, you know, that I was deranged. But for example, because I didn't have any soil, it was a piece of stone. I need to create some substrate where the local seeds could take a spot and grow from there. So when people saw that I was just throwing hay, you know, cubes of hay into the ground, that is used for animal feeding, you know, people feed from hay. So when people saw that I was just throwing it to the ground to let it rot, people thought that I was, you know, insane. But after they saw that what I was doing, you know, trying to make these line curves in the property and covering it with mulch, they saw that everything was growing up, and the soil was taking this regeneration process, and they start, you know, coming. So I saw that the best way to teach.
What's going on over there?
What's going on with this guy, you know?
Yeah.
Also, when I was doing my house out of mud, they were like, is this guy poor? Or what is happening with him, you know? Why is he building with mud? But it's strange because their ancestors, they did it that way. But it's strange for them to see.
Sometimes it's the connection side, because they think, oh, something's old, so it must not be as efficient, or it must not be as good, because we're meant to be developing, right? But in reality, you know, your mission kind of shows that some things were done very, very well, and we've moved away from effective utilization. So I'll let you carry on there.
Yes, absolutely. You need that syncretism, you know, the old from in combination with the thing that are new. But we'll talk about that later on. But so after we finished that experimental plot very successfully, I think the change has been amazing in the plot. You can see these results that are absolutely bonkers. You could see something that started from a piece of rock, and now right now we can see trees 4 or 5 meters tall. I mean, it has been amazing to see the process. And right now we are now developing our second project. Right now, I'm here in Zacatlán. There is another place in Mexico.
Fantastic. We will definitely get into that. You know,
you
so
will love
mission,
that thing.
Your mission centers on teaching people, you know, to build their homes, grow their food, manage their water and their energy. Walk us through how, you know, these four pillars create true self-sufficiency. You know, someone hearing that, they might go, okay, all right, well, how am I going to go about building my home or growing my food? And how is that going to get me through day-to-day life? Walk us through how these pillars, you know, create true self-sufficiency.
Sure, absolutely. Sometimes it's not only an economical, a matter of a budget. I mean, it's not everything about money, you know. Sometimes the process of getting involved on growing your own food, it's not just because you need to save money to grow the food. You know, it's not only about saving money. It's about the process. Today's society is so deeply rooted in leisure, laziness, and tremendous disconnection from what it eats and what it depends on. And that is what causes anxiety and fear. It's something that comes from an evolutionary process. Your body is adapted to work in a certain way, to realize certain processes. Your brain is wired that way. So when you are not doing what you're supposed to do over the, you know, hundreds of thousands of years, your body and your mind is like, okay, now what? I cannot spend hours watching a screen. I'm not adapted to that. Mm-hmm. And that energy that your mind and your body is not being released in the proper way, it transforms in anxiety. And fear.
So what I'm getting is kind of connecting us back to our roots of how we are meant to exist habitually.
Let me give you an example that I think that gives us a picture. Do you remember this picture, predator, alien versus predator?
Yes.
The you know, the predator culture, the Yatwa, or I think that's the name for that species, Yatwa, I think, something like that. These people, these aliens, they come to different planets to hunt in the ancient way with, you know, spears and, you know, as the old way. Because supposedly,
I mean, almost, so he did have a little rocket pack up here.
Yeah. I mean, yes. But they try to do it the most ancient way. Even if they have this amazing technology that enables them to travel across the universe.
Yes.
They still try to connect with the old traditions.
Okay, I'm with you.
Know?
I'm with you. I understand. Yes, I get
because
what you're saying.
Because that gives them that sense of pride, that sense of self-sufficiency. You know, it's very important that no matter how advanced a society is, there are certain things, certain roots that you must not disconnect from. That's very important.
Very interesting. And I'm going to let you all think about for that moment as we take our first break to hear from our station sponsors. And we'll be back soon.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy?
Falling, cheating, being chased, naked, drowning, losing teeth. What if I fail? What if something goes wrong?
I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real, but that's so you remember them.
They're messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
Click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to Our Altered World. I'm here with Rodrigo from Hombre de Mai, Men of Corn. We have just touched base on the incredible work that Hombre de Mai, Men of Corn are doing, drawing on this ancient belief that humans were created from corn and intertwining this deep cultural connection to influence the way that they're not only educating people on permaculture and sustainable design, but also learning through learning and adapting their techniques as they move forward with their mission. Speaking of your mission, now climate change is affecting traditional farming and building practices, you know, across Mexico. How does your integration of this ancestral wisdom, and you know, we're speaking about this modern technology as well, like how does this integration of ancestral wisdom with modern technology help these communities adapt and thrive?
Sure. Well, we need to integrate both worlds. That's what I have been saying all these years. Tradition teaches how to survive in our territory, yes, but technology helps us to scale and adapt. If we combine chinampas, for example, with sensors or natural building with design software, or we implement AI sometimes in governance processes or public administration, we can create communities capable of thriving in this changing scenario, you know. Unlike some of my contemporaries and colleagues, my approach is not merely traditionalist or purist in the agricultural or ancestral sense, nor it is an entirely technological one. My approach is hybrid. We walk in the middle, as I like to say it. I believe that if we combine the essence of the past with the power of the present, we will achieve the best possible future. We need to combine these both worlds.
Beautifully said. Now, just before the break, we talked about some of your projects. But before we move forward, I want to think about, you know, beyond these individual projects that you do, you work with businesses on regenerative strategies and social responsibility as well. What do you find are the most, you know, pressing sustainability challenges that you help these companies tackle?
There are different kind of businesses. We give technical advice or design, or we make the design processes. We design the processes they work with. The most urgent challenges, I think, are managing water properly. I think that will be the number one. A second, carbon footprint and rethinking waste. That definitely is very important. And redesigning production processes. So basically, we show companies that regeneration is not a luxury. It is a great economic opportunity, and it's the only way to continue existing in the long term. So our key, I want to think it that way, our key of success has been how to make the permaculture process economically viable. So, for example, there's a certain hotels and resorts, you know, in Cancun or Tulum that are high-end places. And when they approach to us, we show them, for example, how to work with in local materials, you know, local building materials. There's a material in Yucatan called Sascap. That is the ancient way of building in that part of Yucatan, because you have no soil, there's no clay. So instead of working...
Just so the listeners get an idea of what we're talking about. So Ombre de Mai, they use bioconstruction. So they're using cob, which is clay, sand, natural fibers, and other earth-based materials, you know, to create what are healthier living spaces. And they work with a lot of these resorts and hotels, as well as other companies around Mexico, to effectively reduce both environmental impact, but also get these companies thinking about things like permaculture, bioconstruction, and these regenerative economics. So just as I've said that anyway, let's just jump back off of that. How you know, these techniques, they're creating these healthier living spaces while reducing environmental impact. What does that mean? What does that mean to the people listening today? And what does it mean to the hotels when you approach them or they approach you?
Well, everything comes from the pillar that a natural building, one of the, you know, the key or main... How do you say it? Rules for building is that you must use local materials, integrate them as much as possible. Mm-hmm. So, for example, let's just give an example. In Yucatan, there's in Tulum a project called Azulik that is a high end resort, very expensive, really amazing places. The aesthetic of the place is just flawless. So when companies or businesses like that, they come to us, we said, you all think in bamboo. Everybody's, okay, it's a regenerative project. Okay, let's build with bamboo. Okay, but the question is, do you have bamboo in your site? No, you have to bring it from other place. No, wait. There's certain wood that is in your place that is resistant, that is beautiful, and that can work perfectly with what you're doing. So try to integrate this kind of wood, try to integrate this kind of substrate, and you will have something that is unique, that is adapted to the local environment, and that show it and presents this unique character that the building has. So you must adapt the construction to the place you're developing in. So basically, that's
it's a threefold problem, really, because, you know, you can have a sustainable material, but is it sustainable for you? When you really think about things like transport costs, environmental impacts of bringing it there, you know, chopping it down from another area, bringing it to, you know, we're talking about the bamboo, where it's coming from, and you're talking about, well, there's local materials as well that you can utilize and build into your construction processes. You know, thinking about these sustainable journeys that these hotels are on, that you're also trying to guide them through, what about listeners here today, for the listeners that are inspired to begin, you know, the sustainability journey, what are the most practical steps you can give them to, you know, participate this way, even in urban settings?
Well, in the city, you can start simple. Grow food in pots, harvest rainwater, separate waste, or learn a natural craft. You don't need a farm to begin. Just take one step toward self-sufficiency. Eventually, you're going to start enjoying this, and one step after another cover miles. So everything that starts from a hobby turns into a lifestyle. That's for sure. Destination, I think, is more important than speed. It's more important to know where you're going rather than just going, you know, absolutely and speed towards a place you don't know where you're going to be with no purpose in the long run.
I always say to people, in imperfect sustainability, you don't have to be doing everything amazing from day one, but it's about the attitude of working towards things, you know, replacing things where you can, making those adaptable changes that aren't going to negatively impact your way of life a lot in a way that you might not even notice in a few years. And then you might be more inclined to then change more moving forward to this goal. You know, like you said, the goal is more important than that.
There's something that my teachers taught me from the beginning that I think is very important to mention to your listeners. Sustainability and all this is not a religion. You got to understand this. This is not a religion. You're not committing sins if you don't separate waste. You don't have to be perfect all the way. Mm-hmm. That's nonsense. This is more a transformative process that comes from the inside. So it is more important that probably you don't separate your waste as you should be doing it, or maybe you're using plastic in some other things on your daily life. if you connect with the joy and you really, yeah, you really enjoy the process of, for example, growing a tomato plant, is more important than trying to do everything perfectly, because in the long run that won't make a change in yourself. And it's important to point that if we want to do something real for the climate change, we look at it as a spiritual transformation in people, sociological process. It's not a biological sense. It's not a, you know, if we want to change our world, the change must come within. I mean, that yes, everybody says that, you know, and
true. But yes, it's very, but well, it's true. So you paired it well with your story. I did love that. You know, so bringing it back to your work involves, you know, traditional knowledge from indigenous communities. How do you respectfully integrate these ancestral practices with the contemporary permaculture principles, for example?
Well, basically, respect is the foundation. It's not only about romanticizing or appropriating. It is not appropriation if it's done with gratitude and love. Because when done this... Yes. So yeah, you can say it is not appropriation, it's appreciation. Mm-hmm. Because when done this way, it becomes a tribute. So it is about listening, learning, and giving back. I combine ancestral practices with permaculture principles so they remain alive and relevant today. So I try to be as correct in the processes as I can, but I complement the processes with technology. So basically, that's that.
You've completed over, 200 projects. I think that's the number that I have across
Mexico. More or less,
Mexico.
Maybe more.
Oh, wow. Amazing. So can you share a transformation story that really embodies, you know, this community-led regeneration that we've been speaking about, you know, both for the people and for ecosystems?
Sure. In communities where we've installed, for example, wire system or regenerative agricultural projects, people don't just gain resources, they gain dignity. One powerful example is a rural village in Oaxaca called Yutenino, a place we were invited to teach them about natural building, soil restoration, and food gardens, and so on. And that went from struggling with scarcity to producing surplus food. It was an indigenous region that was trying to get, how do you say it, like the approval from the local government that they were a community, a legal established community.
Yes, yes.
So to gain that certification from the local authorities, they need to have a school, a small school. They need to have this central government office, a small one, but a place to make meetings and to, mm-hmm, you know, write down legal documents and so on, to establish, you know, a village.
It's really sad sometimes, just on that note, to think about all of these really ancient-rooted communities having to now navigate what are like modern-day criteria of what makes, mm-hmm, you a community or not. It is really sad to think about it in that sense, but I don't want to navigate too much away from our conversation, so please carry on.
No, it's totally right what you're saying. So basically, this shift wasn't only material. That's something important to mention. It changed their confidence, their outlook, their sense of belonging. Because when you work with other people to build a village from...
So you said that they went from having food scarcity to food surplus. What did this food surplus look like to them? And what was their, you know, almost like emotional reaction to that change?
Well, when you go to these communities, for example, they depend on corn a lot. I mean, they are the real men of corn. When I stayed there for, I don't know, months, you could eat in the morning, you have this corn atole, that is a beverage made of atole. But at the same time, you eat tamales that are made of corn, with tortillas that are made of corn. So basically, the only food
a lot of carbohydrates.
Yes. So by the end of the week, you cannot go to the bathroom. You're so stuck to that, you know. So they don't have too much food diversity. So when they learned that they can grow a lot way more different foods in their own lot, they started to enjoy food again, because it was not only corn and beans. It was 60 or different food elections you can pick. So for them, they were really happy, you know, to see, oh, this tastes awesome. What it is? This is called arugula. Oh, I love this. If you combine it with corn, it tastes better. Yeah.
Straight back to the corn. They're like, if you use that with corn.
Straight back to the corn.
Yeah.
So it changed, you know, the way they live every day today. So, yes.
That was beautiful. I really love that. What an impactful moment that must have been for them and for you. Speaking of impact, ecotourism and sustainable retreats, they have been growing so much in Mexico. How do your projects, you know, demonstrate that this regenerative design concept that you work with can be both beautiful? You know, you spoke about all of this like stunning architecture and economically viable. Let's say there's someone who's listening today that might work for one of these resorts and thinks, oh, it's so much easier just to do brick and mortar rather than a building of corn or building with these other materials. Let's talk about this concept.
Sure. Our projects demonstrate that sustainability doesn't have to be rustic or unattractive. A regenerative space can be beautiful, elegant, comfortable, and economically viable. People are drawn to these places not only to rest. They also come to these places to learn and take a piece of that transformation back home. What we're trying to achieve with the new project I was telling you before, we are implementing is precisely to create these transition villages. Our goal is to help new generations to adapt to a new way of life that combines core knowledge with the best of technology. So for people out there that doesn't understand the principle, people right now, if you see it on these retreats and ecologists and on all of this, people are trying to get us back a sense of ancestral knowledge in many ways. You can see it in people that usually they are the sons of people of, you know, of people that owns military complex industries, you know, it's something like that. So basically, right now, all the eco thing has been getting into these luxury, high-priced services. And it's okay. I mean, I don't see anything bad at it. But because at the long run, it has some a good impact in lower.
It's about finding, I guess, the balance of the money coming into the economy from these hyper luxurious resorts.
But in society, for example, if you see a celebrity using or wearing or going to the, you know, certain materials or going to these retreats or going to a temazcal that is,
okay,
you know,
I'm with you.
Something
I'm with
like
you.
That.
So you're saying working with these retreats, you know, let's say they are starting to implement this regenerative design and you have more of these retreats, even if they're the hyper luxury ones, starting to build up. And you're having these celebrities or people of influence visiting them, it's going to add more intrigue and wanting more accessibility to those areas and to those design styles among the cohort of hotels and retreats across not only Mexico, but globally.
Yes. If you want to make something in the mainstream or you want to make it the norm, you got to start from the up to the bottom. Yes. For example, if people with low resources, they see that people that have money, they started to building with cov or mud, they will say, they're doing it? Really? So it's nice, or you're supposed to be a high profile people if you build with mud again? Okay, I want to build with mud again. So, you know, that's the way society thinks. It's just, if you see a celebrity or are rich people eating native and endemic plants, they will say, oh, well, my you know, people from lower, you know, income classes, they will say, oh, well, my grandmother used to eat these natural and endemic plants. So it's cool again? Yes? Okay, well, I'll do it again. So
everything's circular. That is what's happening. I'm going to leave you all with a moment to think about how society or people have influenced the decisions when it comes to your habits or things like travel. And on that note, we'll be right back after this short break.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Somewhere on Earth, there are 4 acres that belong to you. You don't need to be there in person, only there in purpose, protecting it, defending it, keeping it alive. Because the world doesn't need more good intentions. It needs more meaningful actions. Register your interest at 4acresearth.com.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to Our Altered World. I'm here with Rodrigo from Hombre de Mai, Men of Corn. We just touched based on the incredible work that Rodrigo has been doing in and out of both ecotourism and sustainable retreats in Mexico, and how this is also affecting the wider impact of both regenerative design being both economically viable and the knock-on effects that it has in the wider tourism community. Now, when it comes to sustainable living, you know, cost, complexity, effectiveness, there must be common myths that you encounter in your day-to-day that people always present you with. How does, you know, this hands-on education part of your work change people's perspectives?
When people participate in our hands-on workshops, you know, building with earth, harvesting water, planting food, they realize it's accessible, affordable, and deeply rewarding. Education turns skepticism into conviction. For example, people have this myth that, for example, adobe doesn't last. If it gets a little bit of water, it would just, you know, be gone. So when they see that mud-made house, so to speak, it's resistant, that you can throw water at it and you can use a pressure hose.
You're
and
like, everything. It doesn't melt. It's still standing.
It doesn't melt. It stands, yes. You know. And they say, how do you achieve that? Because we combine the mud with these modern products that give it more strength or whatever. They need to see this in action. Myths comes
like visual,
from the lack...
visual evidence.
Yes, absolutely. Myths comes from a lack of experience. That's where a myth comes from. Something that you believe you heard from somebody else, but you haven't experienced it yet. That's where myth comes, when a myth comes from.
Beautiful. So your courses that we've spoken about, you know, these education, these hands-on experiences, they range from, you know, three-day workshops to really comprehensive, like, permaculture certifications. How do you balance this, you know, theoretical knowledge with both these practical skills that students can then, you know, immediately apply to their own lives?
Well, we balance theory with practice by teaching principles and immediately applying them. The students might study soil fertility in the morning and will be planting or building that same afternoon. This way, knowledge is embodied, not just memorized. That I think that's the key when you teach this kind of stuff.
So it's really, really hands-on. You know, you're speaking about this stuff, but also getting them right into the gritty with it. Oh,
absolutely.
I love that. You know, despite these times that we're in with environmental challenges and climate uncertainty, what gives you hope for Mexico's transition towards regenerative communities?
I see Mexico awakening. There is a growing movement of young people, not only Mexico, in all over the world. I have seen it. It's not very commented on the news media, just in media like that, the ones you're giving to people. They are the only spaces where you can see that are a growing movement of young people, communities and entrepreneurs committed to regenerations. Hope lies in that collective energy. People who are no longer waiting for governments any longer. In Mexico, that's particularly the case. We're no longer waiting for government to solve the problem because they can't. So we are building the future with our own hands and with our own resources, starting from where they are and what they have. Basically, what is happening in Mexico, let's talk about, for example, security. You know, organized crime here in Mexico is like nuts, you know. The government is not any longer providing any sense of security. So people are starting to take, their action in their own hands. I'm not saying in the violent way. I'm saying to take a more, to have a more active role in their own security. Mm-hmm. Because what is happening in the world right now, we are seeing these geopolitical forces, you know, trying to get this tripolar world, you know, these new empires trying to consolidate. But the paradigm is changing. It looks like nobody's noticing it, at least not from my perspective. Centralization of government, centralization of decisions right now is no longer effective. You can see it. We right now, technology have made possible the decentralization of the government activities. So in Mexico, it's happening that way. Eventually, as the years goes by, in the food, the security, etc., communities are going to take a more active role. The decentralization of power is going to take place in Mexico. I really think that Mexico probably in the next 10 to 15 years is going to change dramatically. Probably is not going to be longer a federal country. I think it's gonna be broken in regions as it were hundreds of years ago. So it's going to be happening the same in many other countries. Decentralization of everything.
Wow, that's a very interesting concept. I'm going to be thinking about it a lot after our chat here today. You've been running this, you know, we've already alluded to about 15 years. Let's say, look at the past 5 years. What has been your proudest achievement, whether it be, you know, student impact or project scale or community related?
Well, in the last years, what I value the most is seeing former students become teachers, project leaders and community builders themselves, knowing that thousands of
the
people
knowledge
are multiplying.
Is being passed on. Yes.
Yes. Yes. I mean, multiplying this work worldwide is more powerful than any single project. My students are the project I am most proud of.
Wow. I love that. You know, during the course of this time, has there been any unexpected discoveries on your side? You know, whether that's about, you know, soil restoration or water management or even, you know, natural building that surprised you even like with all of your years of experimenting?
Yes. What I was surprised the most is the resilience of soil. Even land considered dead can come back to life with the right processes. I am amazed on how powerful is nature. It is amazing. Let me tell something to your audience. Maybe, yeah, climate change has been going faster than we thought, and things look grimmer from certain perspective. But let me tell you something. Nature is amazingly powerful. If you think that a process would take generations, you're wrong. It will take a couple of years. I saw it with my own eyes. The lot that I started in Guanajuato taught me that nothing is truly lost when we work with nature instead of against it. Processes go a lot way faster than you think. And above all, something that deeply impressed me was seeing processes that I would expect that it will take decades. Honestly, decades. Happening in 4 years. So maybe you think, oh yeah, to do something about climate change is going to take 2 or 3 generations. Nah, that's nonsense. It will take probably 10 years or 15 years, something that is achievable, totally achievable in your lifetime. So I could see literally how the roots of native plants were able to break down rocks and turn rock into soil in 2 or 3 years. The amount of biomass produced year after year was truly impressive. So it is important to mention that the place I chose for the first family scale experiment was a terrain made entirely of stone, where the soil was completely eroded. And in just 6 years, you have trees over it. So it's not a process that, my grandfather put this tree and I have been able to enjoy it. No. That's not like that. Nature is fast and it's powerful.
Speaking of nature, looking ahead, what role do you see, traditional food systems like the milpa, corn, beans, squash, playing into feeding what are growing populations, but sustainably?
Well, the milpa, talking about the milpa, corn, beans, and squash, is more than a food system. It's a cultural code of cooperation and biodiversity. I believe that it will play a central role in feeding populations sustainably, showing us that diversity always outperforms monocultures, that's for sure. However, I recommend propagating and consuming native and endemic plants over regular crops, since there are many advantages in doing this. Not only is it easier to grow and propagate plants that are adapted to the environment and require far less maintenance, but also they often have greater nutritional value. I feel the same way about chinampas, which to me are the perfect permaculture system. So I have a teacher, Ramon Ayala, that was one of my teachers. He has this property around near where I live, probably 20 miles from where I live. And when I saw his producing areas, I saw just weeds and things that I didn't recognize as crops. But he said, he told to me, do you know how many edible native plants you have around this semi-desertic environment, Rodrigo? No at all. I don't know anything about it. Well, we have 75 plants that doesn't need me to water them, to try to manage any pests. I don't have to be digging soil. I don't have to do anything else than just propagating. And once it's propagated, it will multiply it. So I have like 60 different things that I can eat that are delicious, that are traditional recipes for that. And it doesn't require my energy at all. It is able to live by its own. So it is more effective, it is more cost efficient, more intelligent to propagate endemic plants rather than to put, crops that comes from other places. So that's something that I have been teaching over these years too. The advantages of propagating and consuming endemic and native plants.
Speaking of these teachings, how can people learn more about Hombre de Mai and participate in your courses or, bring these teachings to their own communities?
Well, people can learn more by joining our courses, visiting our demonstration sites, or bringing these teachings to their own communities and countries. We love to travel. So all information is available on our website, social media, and through our international certification programs. So basically, just get involved, practice, get involved in your own food circle. It's important to do something, to practice it. That's what we encourage people.
And what would you say is your final message of hope for creating a world where humans can live in harmony with nature?
Well, we are the children of the earth. If we remember this, we can heal both ourselves and the planet. It's a mutual process. My message is simple. Regeneration is not a dream. It's already happening. It's not on the media like that. But for those who think we are moving too slowly and that tragedies in this world are growing greater, let them know that our greatest advantage has been going unnoticed and ignored until now. When it is time to step forward, we want to remind them of our, and we are ready when the time comes, as soon as time gives us the starting point, we will get it done fast. We will get it done effectively, and we're just waiting the moment. We want to remind them of a wise phrase from permaculture. So it is the slow, steady, and consistent solutions that prevail over time above quick and impatient ones. So just give it a little bit more time to the process that is occurring on society and on the world. You'll see that everything will match. I have seen these patterns moving towards that goal. So don't lose hope. Trust in natural intelligence. Nature has been doing this forever. Trust everything that is happening right now with us, with this monkey prototype we are. Trust me, nature has been pulling the strings many time ago. So just give it time and you'll see how everything fits.
Thank you so much for that, Rodrigo. And thank you all for listening to Our Altered World today. If you enjoyed the show, I'd love for you to visit our website, ouralteredworld.com, where you can join our community and find more information on upcoming shows. You can also find some of my work on social media at Flunking Monkey, FLUNKINGMONKEY. And until next time, I hope you all have a great day.